This is Candace Rowan, Director of Marketing with Aquila Group of Funds. Today is January 21st, and I am joined by Chris Johns, Portfolio Manager of Aquila Tax-Free Fund of Colorado. Chris also co-manages Aquila Tax-Free Trust of Oregon, along with Tim Elks. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now that we know the Democratic Party will control both the executive and legislative branches for at least the next 2 years, what are your thoughts on policy changes that may impact the municipal market?
Well, there's a couple things I think that will be different here, even in the short run. I think, first of all, the relationship between Washington, D.C. and state governments will be a little less contentious than it was under the previous administration. So we think that's probably good for municipal bond credit quality. Anytime there's a little bit more certainty on federal funding for various local, state and local projects and in a more partnership type of approach towards funding, it's generally a better credit event for municipal bonds. The other part that could be important to municipal bonds as well is tax policy. We'll have to wait and see how that shakes out. I would say that it's likely that we could see corporate taxes go a little bit higher. Whether there's a change in individual tax rates is less certain. If there is, it's only going to be at the highest brackets. And even then, that's probably a net positive for municipal bonds as well. So I would say net-net, from a credit standpoint and from a value of tax exemption standpoint, we would expect a kind of a constructive environment here for the next couple of years.
Chris, I want to get your thoughts on issuance as well. The market has seen an increase in taxable issuance. Would you say taxable munis are gaining popularity with investors and issuers, and do you expect to see that trend continue?
Yeah, that's really been a growing asset, fixed income asset sector in the last couple of years. As you know, in 2017, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act eliminated the ability of municipal issuers to refinance their debt using the tax-exempt market. And so happily for the issuers over the last few years, taxable rates have been very, very low, and it has made sense for them to refinance older, higher interest rate tax-exempt debt with taxable debt. The other thing that's happened is, as you point out, it's not only the issuer side of it, but it's the investor side of it as well. And investors have been very interested in taxable municipals over the last couple of years because it was also kind of a growing and new asset class that taxable investors really liked, particularly the credit characteristics of municipal bonds. And so there has been demand for taxable municipals. You know, whether it continues or not, it's going to depend on a couple of things. It's possible that the rule that the no refunding rule in the tax exempt market could be eliminated. There is a bipartisan group that's talking about, you know, bringing back the ability to refinance in the tax exempt market because it's a great tool for state and local issuers. So that could change, and that would obviously reduce the supply. But until it does, I think issuers will still use that technique as long as it makes sense for them to do that from an interest rate perspective. In recent weeks, we've seen taxable rates go up faster than tax-exempt rates, and so it's less attractive for an issuer to borrow in the taxable market to refinance old tax-exempt. It can still be done, but it's not nearly as positive to the issuer as it was a few weeks ago.
What are you seeing with credit ratings and potential downgrades? Do you expect to see more stress on certain muni sectors as we continue to address the pandemic?
Well, the pandemic is really the key factor here. I mean, it affects all economic activity, and obviously that impacts, you know, several different sectors in the municipal bond market. So I would say that for certain types of issuers, there will still be stress on their credit, as long as the pandemic conditions continue to exist. A couple of things I would say about that, though. We've seen, I would say overall, nationally, we've seen credit in certain areas remain relatively strong, better than I think people expected. First of all, in any kind of property tax-backed bonds, which, you know, represent a large percentage of the market, as much as 40 or 50% of the market, you know, real estate prices have done very well in most parts of the country, and so that credit has held up well. Sales tax-backed bonds have done better than people expected as people continue to spend, only just in a different way. So it hasn't been as bad as some expected. There's other sectors, such as in transportation, higher ed, hospitals, where the pandemic has felt far more seriously. And so for those, like in any recession, you know, it's like we already have seen some ratings downgrades. It's likely we could see some more. But overall, the funding that they're getting from the CARES Act and with the new administration, even today, they're announcing direct funding to some of these sectors that have been hurt more than others and due to the pandemic, more direct funding from the federal government. So that really makes a difference. Doesn't make up for everything, every revenue that they're losing, but it does help ease the way a little bit. So it's going to be really important to keep close track of credit developments, which is something that we've always done anyway and have very, very strong credit research to kind of avoid any problems here. In Colorado, credit experience there, Colorado's an interesting state. It has a very broad range of credit quality in the issuers because we don't have state GO issuance there. For the most part, the state of Colorado has endured the pandemic very well from an economic standpoint. Our sales tax collections in the state are actually higher than last year. The real estate market in Colorado, and particularly in the Denver metropolitan area, has been very strong. You know, the values are higher today than they were a year ago, and roughly 40% of our portfolio is backed by real estate values, so that's held in very well. Some sectors of concern would be higher education issues, transportation issues, and probably healthcare issues. For us in this portfolio, there's a couple of things that we've learned over the last year. The Denver International Airport, for instance, had two-plus years cash on hand prior to the pandemic, plus the additional impact of the CARES money they got from the federal government, roughly $270 million, has really kind of smoothed out the credit impact there. Higher ed as a sector has also received almost $500 million, or $450 million in CARES funding. And then the third thing I mentioned in transportation, RTD, which is the local mass transportation and light rail line, that has also received direct CARES funding, but they've really struggled through this. Fortunately for RTD, most of their funding comes from excise and sales taxes. Less than 20% of funding comes from farebox, which, you know, obviously ridership has been way down, but those other taxes, excise and sales tax, have held up very well. So it may not be as bad as it seems on the surface, but we're watching those sectors very, very carefully. There's a meaningful difference in credit quality from sector to sector, and that's the first time that's happened in many, many years here. So our credit research here is high of importance as it's ever been.
Let's close with your outlook for the muni market over the next few months. Where do you think yields might go from here?
Well, you know, we think that a couple of things that, as I mentioned a minute ago, one, we've seen interest rates on Treasury securities kind of edge up here in the last few weeks because there's concern about the, you know, the massive amount of the debt that the U.S. government is taking on, and you would expect that. You would expect rates to go a little bit higher. So far, they really haven't pulled municipal bond rates along with them yet. So the relationship between tax-exempt and U.S. Treasury rates, you know, is still favors probably the Treasury rates at the moment. At some point, that'll change. I think rates will have to edge a little bit higher in the muni space as well. We've had very strong demand for munis in the last several months, and that's really been the, you know, the main force in keeping tax-exempt rates low. So we think that throughout the year, rates might edge a little bit higher, nothing very dramatic by any means, but slightly higher. In terms of credit quality, we think that, you know, some areas are going to be just fine. Other areas could be subject to some stress. And it's something that we will watch very closely.
Chris, you always provide a wealth of information for our listeners. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your expertise.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Before investing in the fund, carefully read about and consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and other information found in the fund prospectus. The prospectus is available from your financial advisor when you visit aquilafunds.com or call 800-437-1020. Information regarding holdings is subject to change and is not necessarily representative of the entire portfolio. Mutual fund investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible. Investments in bonds may decline in value due to rising interest rates, a real or perceived decline in credit quality of the issuer, borrower, counterparty, or collateral, adverse tax or legislative changes, court decisions, market or economic conditions. Fund performance could be more volatile than that of funds with greater geographic diversification. The fund seeks to provide as high a level of income exempt from state and federal income tax as is consistent with capital preservation. For certain investors, some dividends may be subject to federal and state income taxes, including the alternative minimum tax, referred to as AMT. Please consult your tax professional. Independent rating services such as Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch assign ratings which generally range from AAA, highest, to D, lowest, to indicate the creditworthiness of underlying bonds in the portfolio. Where the independent rating services differ in the ratings they assign to an issue or do not provide a rating for an issue, the highest available rating is used in calculating allocations by rating. Pre-refunded or escrowed bonds are issued for the purpose of retiring or redeeming an outstanding bond issue at a specific call date. Until the call date, the proceeds of the bond issuance are typically placed in a trust and invested in U.S. Treasury bonds or state and local government securities. Modified and effective duration both measure the value of a security in response to a change in interest rates. Effective duration also takes into account the effect of embedded options. The weighted average life, also referred to as weighted average maturity, is a reflection of the quickness with which the principal of an issue is expected to be paid. A credit spread is the difference in yield between two bonds of similar maturity but different credit quality. Taxable equivalent yield is the return that is required on a taxable investment to make it equal to the return on a tax-exempt investment. For certain investors, net investment income tax, known as NIIT, may apply. NIIT is a 3.8% tax established by the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act that applies to the lesser of the net investment income or a taxpayer's modified adjusted gross income in excess of an applicable threshold amount. The acronym PERS, P-E-R-S, stands for Public Employee Retirement System. The acronym PERA, P-E-R-A, stands for Public Employee Retirement Association.